Welcome back to City Club. We're going to talk about our board in just a second. But on behalf of our board, I'm Dan Gibbons, and it's an honor to have you all here. Thank you. Is everybody all? Feel you found your seats? Great. Mayor Johnson, as you know too well, and I assume we'll hear a little more about soon, you know, this city is built on the backs of immigrants and on the shoulders of laborers, and none of that would be possible with all the business folks and philanthropic leaders, civic leaders, academic, and City Club is proud to really convene all of those folks and those institutions from a diversity of communities, sectors, and institutions who at times might have differing interests, right, but not competing, because ultimately when we all collaborate, we make this city and this country stronger. So welcome back here to City Club, where we try to make things better. With our new year, we're excited to expand our board at City Club, some of whom are here today. And they're emblematic of that collaboration, collaborative spirit in the diversity of Chicago. So I'd like to take a moment to recognize and say thank you to two of our new board members who are here today. So please join me in welcoming Dana Popish Severinghouse. Thank you, Dana. And also Marilyn Gardner. Marilyn is here. And they join. We're honored to have them join the existing members of the board, who is run by our chair, Omar Dagestani. He's actually traveling today. But our former chair is here, Jackie Robinson Ivy. And of course, Rufus Williams, who you'll hear from shortly. In the spirit of those who have served for many years, and a special thanks especially to Dr. Ed Mazur. Dr. Ed Mazur and Jose Sanchez. In the spirit of those who served on the board for many years, of course, those who we lost. We always miss Lori Healy. And we also will take a moment to recognize another member who had a reservation here today, a good friend who so many of you know, Brenda Langstrap-Bowie. Who we lost tragically a week ago. But we're so proud of bringing these incredible people together. And in the spirit of those who have done so much for our city, especially those who care about civic engagement and collaboration, we at City Club, we promise to keep that going. And you're going to hear so much more from us. So thank you. I mentioned academia. We have universities here today. Loyola, I mentioned earlier. U of I is here. University of Chicago is here. School board officials. Our president of the school board, Sean Harden, is here. Thank you, Sean. So many businesses and business organizations. I mentioned so many sponsors. We, of course, have World Business Chicago. Thank you, Phil Clement and Charles Smith. Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce, Jack Lavin is here. Businesses like Clayco, mentioned American Airlines, Ardmore Roderick, so many great, and developers. I see Scott Goodman, Zeb McLaurin, of course, Al Friedman. We're in Al's neighborhood, in Al's building. Always good to have you with us, sir. This is, again, that diversity of who makes Chicago move forward. Labor is in the room. We have the Chicago Teachers Union. Jackson Potter, I know, is leading that group. Thank you. And the carpenters. The carpenters are so often in the room representing labor. So many different. We have cultural institutions. Nora's here from the Art Institute. Nicole's here from 360 Chicago. Of course, Navy Pier. And foundations, you know, the philanthropic community, the Joyce Foundation, the Field Foundation, the Golden Institute. These are just examples of who's in this room. And then, of course, we have our elected officials and so many public servants. So please join me in saying hello to Alderman Will Hall, Alderman Lamont Robinson, Alderman Red Burnett, Walter Red Burnett, Cook County Commissioner Stanley Moore, and Cook County Commissioner Tara Stamps. Thank you. Thank you, Tara. Thank you to those public servants and those also maybe not elected but are also public servants. Jason Lee is here. Commissioner Rachel Arfa is here. Acting President of the CTA, Nora Learson, is here. The MPEA CEO, Loretta Clark. City College's CEO, of course, Juan Salgado. Choose Chicago CEO, Kristen Reynolds. Chris Meister's here from the Illinois Finance Authority. Thank you, Chris. And so many incredible people, community leaders. Jamal Cole's here, Blue Pacheco Cornejo, Reverend Walter Turner, Pastor Stephen Thurston. These are all people in all their different sectors who put their lives and their careers on the line to make Chicago the world-class city that it is today. So thank you all for being here and for taking time out of your day to support City Club, to support Mayor Johnson and all the work that these public servants are doing. We're incredibly proud here at City Club of our role and our ability to convene all of you. And we'll convene today to have an incredibly productive discussion with you, our leader of this city, the 55th mayor of Chicago. And before I introduce him, I'd like to mention that our board member and WVON radio show host, Rufus Williams, has agreed to sit down with the mayor after some remarks and ask him a few more questions, some from all of you. So please have those questions ready. Hopefully we'll have time. And Rufus will join the mayor after his remarks. So if you would, please join me in welcoming back to the City Club a great public servant from the west side of Chicago, the 55th mayor of the city of Chicago, good friend of the City Club, Mayor Brandon Johnson.
Well, thank you for that introduction. Good afternoon, everyone. It is really great to be with so many people in this room who voted for me. Yeah, well, that's about 52% right there. And for those of you who did not vote for me the first time, perhaps you'll get another chance to do that. So that's how the mayor of Chicago breaks the ice. You get it? Break. Okay. All right. Look, listen, y'all. That was a double entendre there. Working on my stand-up routine here. I will say this, though. I injured myself. You know, I'm almost 50. I have a birthday coming up, you all. And most of you will be invited to that. But it's amazing at the age of 50 how just regular life activity could lead to an injury or the loss of life. So I was tying my shoes and all of a sudden I was out of breath, started to see stars. So, all right, let's see if we can get to this speech here. But I'm really grateful to be with you all this afternoon. In all sincerity, you all make up the soul of Chicago. To see this room with the eclectic presentation from every single sector, walk of life, black, brown, white, Asian, young, old, working class, a few rich folks snuck in here today too. All of us make up the soul of Chicago. And thank you. I heard that Chris Meister is here, had to travel all the way from Oak Park to get here. There he goes, a few Oak Parkers who just really want to be on the west side of Chicago so bad. Yeah. Let me see. That's it. Rufus, let's go. Let's go. You know, while preparing for this visit, I was reflecting on the last time I was here to speak to you all. It was at the end of 2024, and I put forth a prediction for the year 2025. The prediction was based on what I was seeing on the ground in neighborhoods. It was based on the conversations that I was having with our superintendent. And it was based on the strategies that we were in the process of implementing that were already starting to yield some positive results. I told you all that if we rolled up our sleeves, if we put our differences aside and focused on the work, that I thought we could end the year 2025 with fewer than 500 homicides for the first time in a decade. And now I want to be absolutely clear. Finishing a year with less than 500 homicides is nothing to celebrate. Our North Star is to bring Chicago in line with our peer cities and then to become the safest big city in the United States. But to get there, we must take one step at a time. And even then, many people thought that the modest goal of achieving less than 500 homicides in our city was ambitious. And I don't blame them. The 2 years before I took office, Chicago had over 800 and over 700 homicides. Homicides remained stubbornly high as we worked as quickly as we could to implement the new policies and programs to ultimately drive down violence. We finished 2024 with 587 homicides, a significant improvement from the pandemic years, but still unacceptably high. Let's be clear, the cost of crime in Chicago is more than just the cost of the emergency services and policing, which are certainly extensive. It's more than just the tax base that we lose from black and brown families who are forced out of our city. It's also more than the reputational damage to our city that makes it harder to attract investment and good jobs for Chicagoans. The real cost is all of those factors and the severe trauma that too many Chicagoans face every time a loved one is ripped from their lives. It's the trauma that lasts a lifetime for far too many families, particularly those in the neighborhoods and communities where violence is hyper-concentrated. It's everyone who knows someone who lost someone to gun violence, and it's everyone who loves someone that we have lost. And every single gun violence death in our city is a collective failure, because we know that with right investments, with sustained holistic strategies, we can prevent gun violence. We can end gun violence in Chicago, and we could work to heal our city. And so we put forth this modest goal of under 500, and we ended the year with 417 homicides. And that, again, is nothing to celebrate, because that still means that there were more than 400 families who lost a loved one. Statistics will never console the families who lost loved ones. And there are no comforting words, or there's no comfort for those who were victimized by crime. And at the same time, we saw last year as historic progress in the right direction. Chicago experienced the safest summer in six decades and the fewest annual homicides since 1965. In other words, we made more progress last year than we have made in the last 60 years when it comes to confronting what I believe is the central challenge of our city, which is violence and crime. But it's not just what we did collectively, it's how we did it. We didn't reduce crime by reverting back to the old lock them up mentality. That strategy was an abject failure. It violated black and brown people's civil and human rights. It left us with hundreds of millions of dollars in misconduct settlements, of which we are still paying the price today. And it left communities destroyed, and while failing at its fundamental goal, which was to put an end to rampant crime and violence. Instead of mass incarceration, we had a belief and a concept. How about investing in people? Investing in people is a holistic approach that looks at both immediate interventions to disrupt crime patterns and long-term strategies to transform communities and end the cycles of violence. In the immediate, we'd work closely with our police department leadership, Superintendent Snelling, of course, but also Chief of Patrol John Hine, but also the Chief of our Detectives Division, Chief Antoinette Ercity, who has done a tremendous job revamping the Detectives Bureau so that we can actually solve cases, and so many others in our CPD leadership all working to bring violence down. And that includes our rank and file officers who have embraced this approach and drove real change in our department. When I ran for office, I said the case for more detectives can help us not only hold people accountable, but to bring closure to loss. I'm thinking about our brother Don Williams, who lost his son Dion to gun violence, who works
with our chief of detectives, or Pamela Bosley, who works with women and men who have lost loved ones to violence, and how their purpose has translated into the pain, but the pain has allowed them to find their purpose. And so it's fostering those positive relationships and trust between CPD and community. That's at the center of our approach to policing. That trust is built not through PR events or gimmicks, but through the hard work, the day in and day out of our officers who are on the streets who serve our communities. It's built through actually solving cases, which is why we're glad to see that our homicide clearance rate exceeded 70% last year for the first time in more than a decade. Because if you violate our people in this city, you will be brought to justice. It's built through consistently implementing the consent decree, which is why we're heartened to see that we have made more progress in the past 2 years than we had in the previous 4 years combined towards compliance with the consent decree. It's also built through transparently investigating any and all allegations of misconduct so that residents have faith that our department is adhering to constitutional policing. That's also why I supported the amendment that would allow COPA to investigate allegations of violations of the Welcoming City Ordinance by our department. We need an independent agency to investigate these claims so that Chicagoans know that we take any alleged violations absolutely seriously. We want all Chicagoans, regardless of their immigration status, to know that when you witness or if you are a victim to a crime, to immediately call 911 without a second thought. We need witnesses to come forward without fear of deportation. That was the motivation behind Mayor Harold Washington and James Montgomery when they instituted the Welcoming City Ordinance 40 years ago, to understand that in order to have safe, thriving communities, every single individual needs to feel absolutely comfortable and confident that their call to 911 won't lead to being deported. And we need all Chicagoans to have faith in our police department and all of our city departments, for that matter, that we are governed by the rule of law and that we remain in compliance with all local laws. Isn't it imperative in this moment that we actually have a government that is compliant to law, unlike what we are experiencing at the federal level? But that also raises a serious threat to that progress, though, because we have seen the reckless acts that are coming from the federal government. The very real threat of a return to en masse of federal immigrant agents coming to our city en masse is real. That real threat of another operation is not just the tragic stories of families being ripped apart. Because listen, we've seen all of the images, particularly the images of little girls translating for their parents as masked men with long guns demand to see their documentation based on how they look. We have seen the videos of the residents in the South Shore who were terrorized by ICE agents breaking down doors and zip tying little children. We saw a black man in West Garfield Park who was put in an illegal chokehold by ICE agents. To be put in an illegal chokehold by law enforcement is a death sentence for a black man. And these types of interactions by federal agents present a real threat to the difficult work of rebuilding trust between communities and law enforcement. And when federal agents are throwing tear gas indiscriminately and using lethal force, it is our own police officers that are stuck in the crossfire. And while trying to maintain the peace, our officers are put in impossible situations. And we know that the Trump administration feeds off of seeing chaos in blue cities. Blue cities like Chicago, so that they will do everything in their power to pour gasoline on that fire. And that's why, from our perspective, the work pushing back and resisting the Trump administration's attempt to remake America is fundamentally about public safety. It's a continuation of the work that we are doing to build safe communities. That pushback is not just me simply demanding more from our federal government, but it's about making sure that we do not upset our progress. In communities where there is tension between law enforcement and residents, they do not experience safety, not for long. And when poor and low-income residents have their food assistance cut and their health care slashed. We see spikes in crime and violence out of despair. When schools are closed because they are defunding the Department of Education, when mental health clinics shut down because they are rescinding public health grants, and when we see higher rates of unemployment, we see more mental health crisis, and ultimately, we will see more crime. The fundamental truth is that you cannot build safe communities without investing in people. And the only thing that truly separates our safest neighborhoods in Chicago from the most violent neighborhoods is the level of sustained investment. If the schools are well funded, if the parks are well maintained, if there is adequate police presence, if there are jobs and development, and if young people have the aspiration and the ability to have a career, crime and violence will fall. That's why I did not hesitate when I had the opportunity to release the largest TIF surplus in the history of Chicago to fund our schools, our parks, our libraries, our communities. Because the problem is that some of our communities have been purposefully neglected for so long that the cumulative effect will take unprecedented investment to rectify. This is not about shrinking government. This is about ensuring that government grows to make sure that our communities remain safe. And that is why we continue the fight for real progressive revenue. It's not just about what our communities need today, but it's about righting the wrongs of the past and building a better city for our future. The fight for the revenue that we need to invest in people is about more than dollars and cents. It's about more than numbers on a budget book. And by the way, I haven't seen more people invested in my budget ever in the history of Chicago. I'm going to just keep reading this speech here. I want to say something. It's Black History Month, so somebody says, say it. Here's what we do know. That we know that it is well past time that the ultra rich and big corporations have to pay their fair share in taxes. Because it is a matter of safety. The fact that it's working is proof positive that if we invest in people, we can save lives and transform communities. And the fight for the revenue that we need to invest in our community, it's at the core of this struggle. The life of every Chicagoan is valued, where every young Chicagoan has the resources that they need and deserve, where every community is treasured. And so I'm not here today to put forth another prediction. I am here to talk about the work that we did to get to this point and the work that is still ahead of us to get to where we need to go. I think about a young man by the name of Darian Wiley, who is part of the pilot program that we started in partnership with our labor partners in Streets and Sanitation, where CPS students are trained to become city workers with full-time employment. And now, in less than a year, before he's 22 years old, he will be earning $90,000 working for the city with a pension. I think about the meetings that I had with our community violence intervention partners. They tell me about when they go to someone's apartment to de-escalate a conflict and they find that that person doesn't have a bed to sleep in. And they tell me about the reality of violence and that we need to be serious about dealing with poverty. I think about Sam Sparks, a South Shore native who came back to his own neighborhood to start a small business, The Brew, which now hires young people from the neighborhood. Making Chicago the safest big city in America is the most pro-business action that we can take. It's the number one thing that we can do to make Chicago the most attractive city to invest in. We know that it works because when we had the safest summer in 60 years, you all, we also had the most tourism over the summer that this city has ever seen. We had 11.9 million hotel bookings last summer alone. We had millions of people come to Chicago. They were able to experience the vibrancy of our city, our people, our food, our culture. And that's not just a boost to our local economy. It also lays the groundwork to attract more families to Chicago and to attract more investment. Our plan commission saw more than $10 billion in new investments last year, which will translate into mega projects across our city and more than 12,000 units of housing with 37,000 construction jobs. And I know our aviation commissioner was here recently to share the progress that we are making with our airports, particularly with O'Hare, which last year we reclaimed the throne as the busiest airport in the country. This is Chicago, you all. We are never second to none. I know Kristen wanted me to say we are, yes, never done and never outdone. But to keep this progress moving forward, and frankly, to go to much further heights, we need to stay laser focused on the issue of continuing to drive down crime. And we're never going to do that with the same failed strategies that got us here in the first place. And that's why I'm prepared and willing to take the heat. I will not return to the same old policies of the past, not just because they are morally wrong, but also because they flat out didn't work. Building real, lasting community safety is the most pro-family move that we can make. It's the best way to attract residents to Chicago and to repopulate our neighborhoods, to retain students in our public schools, and to revitalize our communities. It's also the best way to grow our tax base and to solve our city's structural deficit. We are never going to cut our way to solve the deficit structure that we have. In order to address the structural deficit that we have in this city, that I inherited, by the way, we're going to have to make the real conscious decisions to ensure that the people have the most ability to pay. And this is not to say that middle class and working class folks will not pay our fair share. We're just saying, and simply saying, that others have to step up, man up, woman up, person up to do the very same thing, because it's a matter of saving lives. And that will result if we go down the path that some people are pushing for. It will result in even more resource-strained city services while the social needs for those services continue to grow. Now, look, as I close here, we are already in the best competitive position that our city has ever been in. We have world-class universities, our cultural institutions, our food cultures, our access to the world's fresh water. All we need to solve the problem of safety is that we have to unlock our full potential. And the best way to unlock our full potential is that we have to do the things that work. And that means we have to invest in what works. That is youth employment. 31,119 young people for summer jobs, the largest investment for youth employment in the history of this city. It means reopening and expanding mental and behavioral health care services, where we have seen over 100,000 people take advantage of these resources. But it also means that we have to invest in community development, education, and all of the programs that have proven to be effective. We can turn incremental progress into transformational change if we do it together. This is what this moment is calling for. We have to be bold enough to meet the demands, not for today, but meet the demands for posterity. God bless you all, and God bless our most amazing city, the city of Chicago. Rufus, that's dangerous.
Yep.
That was dangerous, Rufus.
I'm not 50 anymore.
You see how Rufus stepped on that stage like that?
Hanging on the nines. This is what you do. That's a lot of people here.
It is. It's really good to see so many people out this afternoon, and I'm grateful for this opportunity to be able to speak directly to the people of this city.
Let me say this. Anyone who had any question ever of whether or not the West Side is the best side, this is your answer.
That's right.
Now, Mayor, I have to begin here because I know our media, you can't answer a question with a question. But I need to ask you, because you gave a wonderful dissertation about what's happening with crime rates and murder rates, and appropriately, one is too many, so 416 is too many, but it's down from the last year and down from the year before, significantly. And if those numbers had gone in a different direction, you would be lambasted for that. Why do you think it is that you are not getting credit for all the things, the positive things that are happening here in the city?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Maybe it's because they read a particular newspaper. Okay, all right, y'all, just simmer down. No, look, this is a collective effort, right? And, you know, as you indicated, one homicide, one act of violence is one too many. But when people ask me about why we are doing what we're doing, I just hope that now that the results have been proven to be effective, that we figure out how we can all come together to continue to drive violence down. Because, look, solving this problem in Chicago opens up opportunities for more investment. When I talk to corporate leaders throughout my entire tenure as mayor, they always say that the number one issue is safety. And there are those, some individuals, who may not want that to remain at the forefront, right? But I'm not going to shrink in a moment in which the city is calling for something bigger and something far more massive. That's why it has to be a collective response. Because the last thing that I'll say to your question, when we drive violence down, we're saving black lives. Can we just be real for a moment? This is not to check anybody's motives, but you at least need to understand mine. When I talk about investing in our communities, it's because I'm trying to save the lives of the people who are most impacted by disinvestment. When people swear and say that they love us and they quote Dr. King or even or James Baldwin, show me you love me by being willing to put your treasure in your heart in the same place. You can't say that you value me, but yet you don't want to invest in me. The best thing that I can do for my children is to demonstrate how much I love them by giving them every single opportunity that is afforded to them by their rights. And that's what the central focus has to be. Whether I get credit or not, look, Rufus, I'm a dad, right? Most of the credit in our home goes to my wife anyway, so I'm accustomed to it. You know, my name is actually Mommy Said. They just walk up to me and they say, Mommy Said, and I respond to it. You know, my kids don't appreciate my humor, and I need y'all to pray for me because... So I have an 18-year-old that we took on his first college tour. To get to your point, by ensuring, and when we got to the campus, he just kept walking faster and faster as that tour went on. Like, he saw himself being further and further and further away from me. And his confidence grew because he understood the value of the investment of this next phase of his life. That's not a complicated, radical idea. Anyone in here, by a show of hands, who wouldn't give everything that you have to make sure that your child has everything that
everybody,
they need?
Everything.
So why, as a city, we can't figure that out?
My God.
Let's figure it out. Aren't our children worth investing in? Do black lives really matter? So the Bible says that where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Yeah. Even socialists agree with that. I'm not speaking to one in particular in the room. What's up, Jackson Potter? You better ask your next question, Rufus.
Well, let me just add to that, because I've always told my son that he is my investment plan. Mm. And I expect it to come back in spades and whatever I've invested in him. And that's what's happening. So to your point, if we do that with our children, then we'll be much better as a city.
Amen.
And much better as a society.
Amen.
It's been, you mentioned that you're going to turn the ripe age of 50.
Yeah.
On the 15th of May, it will be 3 years that you've been in this position. What is it that you are most proud of from the work that you've done? What would you wish you had done differently? And what do you know today that surprised you in these 3 years?
Oh, wow. Well, I'm certainly proud of, you know, the fact that through our investments, youth employment, very proud of those investments. you know, reopening our mental health clinics and expanding the care program, building more affordable homes, all of that I'm incredibly proud of. But I think all that leads towards what I still believe is our top priority. It's leading to driving violence down. And I'm grateful that the city has coalesced around this vision of how we drive violence down. I mean, in terms of, I think your second part of that question was something that I wish I would have done differently. Yeah. I don't know, maybe run for alderman. No, I'm just joking. No, trust me, I'm not going to say anything disparaging. That is a tough job. I'm just telling you. got the amen corner over there. You know, I think what I would have done differently, and I've shared this, I would have done a better job at effectively communicating our why. Like, I took my father's approach. My father's, you know, in his 80s, and he's suffering from dementia now, but he's a very stubborn man. My father is so stubborn that he remembers that he forgot. But it's...
He said he's working on his stand-up. He's working hard on his stand-up.
But this mentality where you just do the work. That's what my father said. Never be afraid of the work. Just get the work done. I think through this process, more people needed to be engaged. Like, the results speak for themselves, right? But bringing people along. I think the surprise to me is... I kind of knew this going into the job, but the biggest surprise to me is how every single Chicagoan is a political pundit. So I get to see the beauty of our city is amazing. And so, you know, I'll ask, you know, someone, you know, about youth employment, and their first response is, "See what you got to do, Mayor, is." But what I'm getting at is that I don't know if I fully appreciated and really knew, like, how much people love this city. Because here's what I've also learned, especially after being mayor for 27 years. If people don't have advice or if they stop talking to you, that's when you got a problem. When my wife is not talking, that's when I know that I have to write my best love letter possible. And so I appreciate the love and the care that comes from every single direction of the city.
Appreciate that. And can you share those love letters with the rest of us?
That'll be in my book that's coming out any day now, my memoir. Love and being mayor, right? I'm going to figure that out.
I should tell you, when you were talking to Sasha Ann, you couldn't hear this, but Pam Bondi was speaking to Congress, and she did note that the reason that murder rates are down in this country is because of Donald Trump. I just thought you'd want to know that.
Yeah, I'm surprised anybody in this room was listening to Pam Bondi in the first place.
It was a...
A quick clip.
It was a crap show.
You have to stay engaged. Here's what I also find fascinating about the Trump administration. The idea that somehow creating havoc and terror is his response to community safety. It's asinine, right? And what I also found somewhat fascinating is that though he did not send more federal agents to the city of Chicago until September, he's also said that he's the reason why violence went down in the summer, which September is technically the fall, but it also shows you how summertime shy is so beautiful that the president believes that September counts as summertime shy. That's how dope we are.
And why we're not going to spend a whole lot of time talking about him. But I do want to ask you, we had an issue around the budget last year, right? So you have the corporate head tax that you wanted to impose, wanted to make sure we did not increase property taxes and looked at things differently. Ultimately, that was a budget that was passed by the office that you wish you had as alderman. But you didn't sign off on it. So talk about what that now means for how you manage the city, how you manage your priorities, and what the differences are between where you are.
Well, look, we're still managing the city, and our priorities are still what they are. It's to drive violence down. And the way we do that is by investing in people. Look, there were a number of measures within that budget that I'm very proud that we were able to accomplish. We were able to make sure that you know, some alders who were adamant about what was ultimately passed, they wanted to remove 5,000 positions from our youth employment. They were prepared to cut those 5,000 young people from having jobs, which would have essentially been jobs lost on the West and South side. We were able to make sure that, you know, there was no, you know, garbage tax fee increase. Like, there were a number of provisions that we were able to protect. We passed for the first time by a major city, actually the first city anywhere, the smart tax, the social media amusement responsibility tax. It's a tax on these big corporations that are causing the very addictive behavior that our young people are experiencing, which is exacerbating their mental health challenges that they're having. And then those resources are going to be used to invest in mental health. So there are a number of things that we were able to get in that budget that did challenge corporations to put more skin in the game. Look, selling off debt of poor people and working people to private debt collectors, I still believe that that's immoral. I do. I believe it's wrong. And the harassing proclivities of these entities are incredibly severe. And I believe that was wrong to do that. And this is not disparaging an individual. I'm not referring to individuals as wicked or immoral. But the decision to do that, I believe, is immoral. And I am monitoring this budget closely. Here's the last thing that I'll say. I just find this to be fascinating. I believe it was the Civic Federation last year that said that we should consider a corporate head tax. They said it. And then they also said that we should consider not paying the full pension payment. And then they decided to flip the script and give the opposite of what they proposed the year before. What changed? The economic viability of our city is certainly stronger, but a tax on 0.5% of big corporations that all just received a tax break from Donald Trump, I believe it was their reasonable service to invest in community safety, since it is the number one issue that they're concerned about. Now, look, ultimately, we have to go to Springfield together, of which some business leaders have committed to doing. We need a millionaire's tax. We should look at a digital ad tax, a progressive income tax. If we are going to protect our communities, the best way to do that is to invest in them. I've said this before, and I know it could be a little uncomfortable what I'm about to say, but because I'm so close to Oak Park, when I'm driving through the world, if you go to Oak Park in the summer, there's not an empty field or playhouse. The schools are supported. I'll never forget, I saw a whole class for kids in Oak Park, a hula hoop class. And these little white kids just hula hooping in the middle of the city there. And the parents drink their coffee and they watch it and they love it. And I'm saying that isn't it worth it for our children to have access to parks and swimming and after school programs and good paying jobs? And so, like, this animus towards progressive revenue, keep in mind that because we didn't do it a decade ago is why we have the structural deficit and the damage that we have now. And now you have people who want to take us back to that. I will take the heat any day, all day, every day, because it's a matter of saving people's lives.
Well, Speaker Welch here talked about similar things. Mm-hmm. So does it seem that in this year there will be a movement more so to make this happen? Because
you're I certainly hope so. And I'm grateful that the speaker has given indication that he supports this. So the work cannot just be working class people. People with means. And I know that there are a lot of good people with means who understand their collective assignment. This is not to say that there's something derogatory about being rich. I can tell you one thing. My oldest is 18, and we, in our workstation during the pandemic, we worked right next to each other. And so at that time, he was 12 years old. So poor kid, he knew more about COVID-19 than any 12-year-old on the globe, right? Because we're sitting right next to each other. And it made him curious, Rufus, about my assignment as Cook County Commissioner. So apparently on his CPS pad, he Googled Cook County Commissioner salary. Walked over to me, showed me the salary, and just shook his head. But here's where it gets better. So through all of that, he's recognized that the people who have the most influence are people who understand the numbers. And so he has heard me on phone calls with people who understand accounting and finances. And so what's his major? He wants to major in accounting, because he's like, I want to talk to the people who really are in charge, right? And so he will be visiting, you know, Loop Capital any day now. Jim Reynolds, my son. No. You know, but I'm lifting that up to say that there is a clear understanding of where we are economically. And we have to find our collective strength to ensure that the city that we pass on, that what my son will inherit, will be better than what his father had to deal with. And I believe that's a worthwhile, righteous, moral, collective call for everyone. And then, by the way, he found out that my CFO left and said, "Dad, I hear you got a vacancy." So, Jill, I just want you to know that you have inspired my son. He wants to apply for that job.
Well, help him understand that it's good to be an accountant, but it's better to be an investment banker.
Fair enough. Okay, hear, hear.
Let's talk about... This is a CPA who's talking, whose son is an investment banker, so I'm practically telling you what I'm doing. Let's talk about schools.
Yeah.
Sean's here. Jackson's here.
Yeah.
Things are changing in the landscape of schools. We have a fully elected school board coming up later this year for the first time, including the election of a president of the school board. So given your history in education as a teacher, as an organizer in the union and all, when you look at the role that you have now while still responsible for the schools, what did you learn from this process? What's different? What could have been done? And what do you see as the future of our schools, given those things? Because you will still be the mayor.
Yeah.
You will still, whether you have responsibility or not, you will still be held to account.
Yeah. First of all, I want to thank, you know, Sean and all of our board members for stepping up in this moment. This is
all 21 of them.
All 21 of them. Yeah. Let's give it up for our school board members. Look, it's a difficult transition, right? But it's something that I believe is the right thing. Democracy it should never be the enemy of people. And what I believe the future of our city and our public schools have to be centered around is around a very simple idea: sustainable community schools. That there has to be real local control and influence and support by the community to ensure that the variety that exists in our city, that schools are not a one-size-fit-all. And by having sustainable community schools, it provides local autonomy for the local community to help determine what that school community needs. Now, there has to be a baseline. Small class sizes, social workers, counselors, psychiatrists, psychologists have to be in our buildings, libraries, librarians. All of that is important. And I say that because, look, especially with the wraparound services of social workers and counselors, when the United States military prepares for war, they send their doctors and hospitals in communities like Austin and Roseland. Because what a doctor is going to experience in a community like Austin or Roseland, it's equivalent to what they're going to experience in a war-torn country. That's how severe the trauma is. Yo, I just want you all to hear my heart. I'm not expecting everybody in this room to agree with my entire ideological frame. What I'm saying is that we have made the case that by investing in people, there's proof positive that investment actually works. There are children in our schools across the state that are literally starving, and it's not just Chicago. You know, you think about, you know, communities like Kankakee and East St. Louis and Waukegan. There are places in this state where we are woefully underfunding our children. And I just personally believe that if I'll quote another scripture. Jesus, the Christ, said that if you cause a young person to stumble, you're better off tying a millstone around your neck and jumping into the lake. That's death by execution. That's how serious Jesus was about making sure that we suffered every little child that comes unto us. And so my vision for our public schools is to make sure that we fulfill the promise and the hope that our ancestors demanded. When the Civil War ended, there were five demands from the formerly enslaved: education, housing, healthcare, transportation, and good paying jobs. I talk about environmental justice as well. That's a friendly amendment. So I don't think it's I don't think it's unintentional that the president of the United States of America is literally cutting all of the public institutions that descendants of slaves fought to secure. It is a righteous call when we talk about investing in education. And my hope is that as the governing body of CPS becomes independent, that those board members recognize the connection to Black liberation through public education as liberation for all. That's my hope for our public schools.
I come back, though. And I think we certainly appreciate that. But I come back and say, you're in charge of it right now.
Yeah.
And how difficult will it be when we move to this more broadly, more democratically elected board of 21 people from different parts of the city to move in those directions when you, as the one person who's in charge of all of it, would have a challenge in getting
it? Yeah, no, that's a great question. I mean, I think it will be challenging. Like, let's just, you know, make it clear, right? I mean, the politics in our city, there is no greater place to do or to experience politics in the city of Chicago. I mean, there just isn't. If you can do politics in Chicago, you can do and be anything. Think about it. The first black president in the history of the world, the United States of America, built his political career in Chicago. There is no better trajectory to the office of the presidency than doing politics in Chicago. But there's no better way to express our full liberation than Chicago. And as difficult as it will be, I'm just reminded of the words of Dr. King. When he came to Chicago, he was very clear that Chicago was incredibly upset by his temerity to call for justice. But one thing that he said two things, never experienced anything like what he experienced in Chicago. And then he said, if they get it right in Chicago, though, then the rest of the world will benefit from. That's why I don't think it's a coincidence that every single executive order that I put forward to hold this federal government accountable, Boston has adopted it, Los Angeles is adopting it, Portland is adopting it. And so I'm just showing that this broader context that as hard as it will be, getting it right is a matter of, again, protecting our democracy, which, you know, again, is under a severe attack right now.
I should take the moment and point out that Dr. King was also a West Sider.
Thank you very much. That's right.
15th and Hamilton.
Hey, y'all going to put some respect on the West Side. I'm just saying.
Let me shift gears again, Mayor. As we look at the administration of the city, you have interims at the helm of a number of key agencies, CPS, CHA, CTA, DCASE. Speak to why that is. What is your plan, and why is it so challenging to find the right talent to run these agencies here?
Look, that's a fair question. Let me just first of all say that even with interims in those positions, government has not stopped, right? We have an interim at CTA, and we've had, you know, more people riding our trains than what we saw pre-pandemic, right? So our ridership is up. Even with CHA under an interim right now, we're still breaking ground and building more public housing. Look, finding the right person is critical. CHA, everybody knows that I believe that the best person to run public housing should be someone who was raised in public housing. That's why I believe that Walter Burnett is the right choice for that position. You know, and, you know, we'll get there. And as far as our public schools are concerned, we're going through an interview process right now. Dr. Macklin Keene is doing a solid job in the interim. We'll have someone. And same thing with CTA. We're going to find the right people who reflect our values. Here's the ultimate goal, is to build the safest, most affordable big city in America. By having the right people in a position who understand that assignment and are part of that alignment, then we'll make those appointments soon enough.
You were just at the Council of Mayors. Mm. You mentioned some of the things, some of the executive orders that you've passed here that other cities are looking to replicate. What else did you learn there that you're looking to replicate from other places, and what else are other cities looking to replicate from what we're doing here?
Look, everything that's dope about America comes from Chicago. So, look, what I learned and what, you know, we're considering here in Chicago is really about building the collective response that's needed in this moment. There's a real threat to our elections because of Donald Trump's ire towards the results in 2020. You know, the first Jewish American to ever serve on the Supreme Court, Justice Brandeis, he said that you can have a democracy or you can have wealth concentrated into the hands of the few. But he said you cannot have both. You cannot have both. And so what I took from that conference was Democratic mayors, Republican mayors all understand that the rubber meets the road at our front door. So wherever I go, people are asking me about anything and everything. You mentioned being on WBEZ this morning. Ask the mayor. Tune in every single month, you all.
And people, you can't be up here with me pushing another station.
Listen.
What we doing?
Dang. Yeah, that is kind of bogus, ain't it? The talk of Chicago, WVON.
Well, no, spread it around. That was good. It was good to do this morning.
Yeah, I mean, so you're faced with every single element. And so that I really, really learned a lot from mayors who are in cities that, so they're in a blue city, but they in a red state, and the challenge is there. But I believe what people have learned from Chicago is that, one, we're not scared. We're willing to go first, and we can take a hit. We can take a punch, you know, and the reason why I think we're able to take a punch is because we know how to throw one, right? So, you know, we're going to keep doing that because it's necessary to protect all of Chicago.
I know we're running close to time, but I do have to ask you a couple more questions. One, this is a big election year. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of offices, a lot of turnover that's happening. You have any predictions or endorsements that you want to share?
Yeah, you know, look, here's what I can say. Two things. One, I think it's important that our city and our county remains focused. And I do believe that President Preckwinkle is still the right person for the job to lead our county. I believe that. And I find it unusually suspect that at a time in which leadership, particularly leadership from black women, has been under attack, that now you have individuals who are essentially embodying the very resistance that I believe led to the President of the United States of America getting another term. Kamala Harris, the Vice President, tried to tell us, y'all.
And she all told us.
She did tell us, right? And I'm just simply saying that when black women, there is no better codification or endorsement than getting that commitment from black women. They rarely get it wrong. And I have to just say, y'all, rarely, because here's the best thing that I've learned about black women. That even if a black woman gets something wrong, you know what her response is? You know what I meant. So even if they get it wrong, it's that you still should have got it right because you knew what I meant. I'm just saying, 27 years with a black woman, she ain't never been wrong, right? But, you know, I think that the elections are critical in this moment, and I'm looking at measures now to make sure that we actually protect the sanctity of our democracy to ensure free and fair elections. I am looking at how we can use the executive authority at the city level to do that, and we're looking at that across the country.
So when the mayor was last on my show, it was earlier this year, and it was before the mayor's interfaith breakfast, and I asked him, I told him I had spoken, and I was really good, and I asked him who was he going to have, and he wouldn't tell me, but he told me that I would not be disappointed. You didn't have to go that far, Mayor, President of the United States. That was pretty.
Now, look, she could have been anywhere in the world, right? Honestly, she could have been anywhere in this country to celebrate Dr. King's legacy and his life. The fact that she came to Chicago, I believe that's a clear signal of the value that the city of Chicago has to the rest of the world. And look, I know my approach is somewhat seemingly abrupt. I do get that there is a translation challenge that we have. Rufus, I was sharing this story with Rufus. I'm not sure if it's apples to apples, but if anybody in here has ever seen the movie La Amistad and the main character, Sin K, and right before, you know, things were moving in the right direction, the attorneys that were working on behalf of these individuals who were in captive, that there was an appeal to take it to the Supreme Court. And the attorneys were trying to explain to Sin K that they didn't win, but almost. And if you remember the movie, Sin K was so frustrated because the word almost did not exist in his language. And so he was just so frustrated. He was like, what do you mean almost? It either is or it is not. And I think sometimes, and just bear with me, that some of the approach that I have, it could be a matter of just translation. There's certain experiences that I do have as an individual that I bring to this job that's different than others. My hope is that we can find people that can help us translate what we're ultimately trying to do, which is to make sure that we are protecting people in this city. And if you know it's the right thing, but perhaps you may not agree with the entire approach, or maybe you don't believe I'm the right person. If it's the right thing, and we know that the approach is working, could not our focus be on doing the right thing and making sure that what works continues to work, regardless of our ability to fully understand the language that we speak?
That fits into so many systems, so many places, even as we talk about the schools and all else with the interim folks in place. I mentioned that this year is a big election year. Next year is a pretty big election year, too. And it's always been a discussion, no matter who is the mayor, who's going to run for mayor. Mm. And so that discussion has started to pick up. And you may have broken it at the beginning of your talk, because You said, you know, some of you all aren't getting the joke. I'm working on my I'm working on my routine. But here's the basic question. Are you running for a second term? Mm.
Wouldn't you like to break news today, wouldn't you?
Well, you know, it's not WVON, but yeah. We'll take it here at the City Club.
Yeah. And I just say that, first of all, serving as mayor is like the most humbling experience that I've ever had, but it has brought me so much joy. It really has. It's the honor of my life. Look, you all, I never imagined becoming mayor of Chicago. You know, I tease, seriously, with Jim Reynolds and my son, because I was explaining to him who Jim Reynolds is. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, by the way, I took an arrest at his office, right? I took arrests in front of, you know, the elevators that are now held for me. Here's all I ever wanted. I just wanted to make sure that our schools were fully funded and supported. That's all I ever wanted. And the opportunity to serve in this capacity where we have seen incredible gains in our city, 6 cranes, 18 on the way. You know, we can build stadiums for sports teams, right? Just ask Joe Mansueto, right? So it's clear that we know how to get stuff done and people are willing to cooperate with us. Thousands of construction jobs, young people that we are investing in, reopening mental health clinics, driving violence down and ensuring that we become the safest, most affordable big city in America. The only reason why I have not talked about my future is because I'm focusing on what the people need today. I'll be very honest and vulnerable here. Do you know why I don't want to talk about whether I'm going to run for re-election or not?
No, I don't.
Because I don't want the people of Chicago to be distracted. I just don't. And let's just be honest. The moment we start having conversations about who's running, who's not running, then that takes our eye off the ball, which is to make sure that we're investing in our people so that we drive violence down. I don't want people to think that I'm just this incredibly altruistic person, but I am a middle child, so I do have a proclivity to put other people before myself. And if I talk about my reelection, that's all folks are going to want to talk about. And so what I want to make sure that happens in this city is that we talk about saving people's lives and that we can build on the future for people that, you know, can see the promise in this city. So many people leave this city and do amazing things and don't feel the need to come back because this city has been mean to them. This city has been mean to people. I mean, you think about how violent it is to shut down schools and then to tell people, well, you know, and then it was for economic reasons. And now our system is in worse economic shape than it was before the schools were closed. Can I just say something? I'm so tired of people lying to the people of this city. They lie to us, right? They try to make a case about why we have to protect, you know, the ruling class while working class people are struggling every day to make the ends meet. If you don't know what it's like for your electricity to be contingent upon your neighbor's electricity, and the only thing that's keeping your lights on is a large, long orange extension cord, if you don't know what it's like to open a refrigerator and not have food in it, my father could not afford the medicine from my mother. Because he lost his job and healthcare is attached to people's employment. Do you know what it's like to go to the pharmacy and the medicine is $900? And you talking to me about 0.5% of the largest corporations in the city of Chicago and rich people spent money to convince poor people that rich people's interest is better than the everyday average person in the city of Chicago? That is a lie. We can do better, Chicago. And if you just for a moment just see the hope that I see when I talk to people across the city and they give me hugs and they, of course, they got to complain about 5 things first before they tell me I'm doing a good job. But that's the hope that I get to experience in this city. The fact that we have more black people who have left this city than any other group. Why are we okay with that? They're not leaving because they just want to skedaddle to Iowa. And no disrespect to Iowa. The Cubs train there. There's a minor league team there. It's good stuff. But that should concern us all. Why are you mad at me for doing what the people of Chicago elected me to do? I've kept every single promise. I have not lied to the people of this city. I said, and people agree, that we have to challenge progressive revenue in this city and this state. And so I don't even remember your question, but it was something about running for re-election. Can we all, how about this? If you all commit that you all are all ready to run to Springfield to fight for progressive revenue, I'll announce what I'm going to do today. I'm talking about everybody.
I think that was everybody. I think that was.
No, I saw some people over here. Kind of like their elbow went up, and they was like, I don't know, Mr. Mayor.
Let me just say, I asked one very direct question, which he managed to forget. He may not have been a politician at the beginning, but he clearly is one now in order to do that. Mayor, thank you so much
You're
for
welcome.
Your time.
And your hey, work. It's my pleasure. Thank you all. Thank you all.